Hello, everyone. It's Friday, the 28th of August, and welcome to episode 20 of the Kite Podcast 2020 with me, Ben Eagle.
And me, Will Evans. And we've got a technical episode for you today, and we're talking feed and forage, delving into the state of silage clamps around the country and looking ahead to see what forage condition might mean in the context of autumn milk prices and COVID. Yes, we've managed to sneak COVID into an episode purely about silage. To do this, we are joined by Welsh dairy farmer Jimmy Evans, Kite consultant Duncan Williams, and Kite's managing partner John Allen. And as always, we're also joined by everyone's favourite dairy market analyst, Chris Walkland.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Chris, let's turn to you in traditional style. What's the market news and where are you joining us from this week, even though we can't actually see you on the screen?
Well, this week I'm on location like Laura Koonsberg, being a real journalist, and I'm interviewing Vox Popping the Locals. And because it's Forage Week, I'm bringing you this report from a place where forage quality and quantity matters the most, a place where it's a question of the locals surviving and thriving or not. And here I am. Inside the rumen of one of Jimmy's cows. I'm interviewing the billions of bugs on what their hopes are for his forage this winter. And I don't know what you've been feeding them recently, Jimmy, but it's absolutely rank in here. I've actually been invited here by the bugs. They're a big fan of mine because they've heard that Jimmy is on this podcast talking about forage quantity. And frankly, they're wetting themselves. They tell me they just can't believe it, given what they're normally served up. They say we should be interviewing them, not you. Nevertheless, they're desperate to know what's in store for them this winter. So the pressure's on, Jimmy. And I'll let you know their reaction once they've all stopped laughing. In the meantime, to the markets. And I'm afraid I have some very bad news this week. This week has reached a new low for the Kite Podcast, and I can't see things getting any lower. But enough about this week's gags. What's happened with prices? Well, the inevitable has happened on butter. Ladies and gentle farmers, as you know, I've been predicting the butter price would fall for week after week after week. And it hasn't. It has increased, not by much, but nevertheless, an increase is an increase. And the sentiment has been down. Okay, so only Dutch has gone up and it hasn't gone up by much. But Polish origin has also increased. But who wants to eat Polish? And SMP prices are showing signs of reversing their declines too, with German and French food grade and Dutch all increasing. And I think one of the reasons for that is there's an Algerian tender in play, so it might be that. And whey prices have moved up a fraction too, and they haven't moved for a while. Here in the UK, cream is as strong as last week in the mid-150s on the back of good weather and decent demand. And that's pulled butter up slightly too, but not enough to match cream in terms of the fat valuation. So either butter will increase further next week or cream will drop. Butter futures are the same as they were last week at around 3,500 euros. That's a pretty decent price. So there's no clue really as to what might happen there. But EU futures have increased slightly again though, and that's another plus. And spot milk is in the 30p range still. There's no change here on cheese, although it's worth mentioning Trump's throwing even more money into the food system with another 1 billion tranche of food aid. So that will have a bullish effect on both the price of cheese and rubber balls in America, because American cheese is what they make rubber balls from. The drop in milk volumes in the EU is also having a bullish effect in Europe on cheese, with some young cheese trades for Edam and Gouda also lifting. And at this point, I don't wish to name drop at all about my excellent contacts, but I'm very, very good friends with the top Gouda guru in in the world, a Dutch maestro manufacturer called Wenceslas. Judah King Wenceslas is his name.
Chris.
What?
That's absolutely awful. We're not keeping that gag in. You'll have to cut it out.
Why? I've been working on that gag for a month.
You could give it a year and it still wouldn't be any better.
Well, look, if that's your attitude, I'm not going to bother making cheese jokes anymore. I mean, some weeks you want me to make them and some weeks you don't. He damned if I do, he damned if I don't.
Oh, that's coming out too.
Why?
Because it's awful.
No, it's... Look, I'll tell you what a terrible gag is. This is a terrible cheese gag. What's a cheesemaker's favourite Beach Boys song?
I have no idea.
Rind, rind, get around. I get around, I get around.
Chris. You've got 1 minute to finish your part, else we're cutting you all together.
All right, okay. Gouda prices. Gouda King Wenceslas last looked out on the market on the Feast of Stephen. There the price lay around about 2,700 euros, and trading was very thin, drawn out and volatile. Not at all deep and crisp and even. Brightly shone demand at night, and during the day, in fact, as well. Although supply was not cruel, it was a bit tighter than it was, and Mr. Wenceslas put his price up to 2,800 euros. Then a poor dairy market analyst came in sight.
Right, Chris, come on, you've had your minute. Right, that's it, cut him off, let's get to the meat of it. We have to have an every week.
I didn't know that Christmas had come so early. Oh, wow. Let's move on, shall we? John, welcome back to the show. We haven't had you on for a few weeks. Let's bring things back down to earth again. Thanks for that, Chris, as well. That
was really good. Yeah. Well, I can't follow that. I mean, I've got to be serious. This is a really serious episode, and the really serious point here is you've got to restock my cellar, right? And the point is that the last time we had a podcast a little bit like this, we stopped the drought, and when we stopped the drought, a lot of people promised me a lot of pints of beer. So I got a lorry load of beer. I filled my cellar, but unfortunately, I've been drinking a lot of it. So what we're doing today is...
That's where you've been.
Yes, I know. But we've had enough rain. I've had enough. Probably lots of you have had enough. And I want it to stop. So what we thought we'd do is talk about actually what we've got in prospect with the forage in the winter coming up, and actually what we can do with it. And I think we've got some fantastically talented young people. Wonderful to have them in the industry. So I'm going to set them up for that and listen to what they've both got to say.
Brilliant. Yeah. Speaking of, we have Jimmy Evans on the show. Jimmy, thanks so much for coming on. Can you introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your forage system?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we're milking 680 cows in Mid Wales, just over the Shropshire border. 3 years ago, no, it could be 4 years ago now, we made a decision to really start challenging the amount of forage we get into the rations. So we implemented the multi-cut system after a couple of trips out to Holland and America, seeing that cutting grass more frequent and really focusing on fibre digestibility for the cow and utilizing protein a lot better, and also the impact on slurry usage, fertilizer usage. We thought it was well suited for our system in order to get, you know, more forage into the diet, improving milk quality, improving herd health. Generally, there's been a lot of pros and cons, but more so pros. It has its challenges every single year. We've had a cracking year up until roughly about the 15th of August. So, you know, every year throws a different problem. Generally this year, there's no doubt about it, we've had a fantastic year on multi-cut silage.
How many cuts would you do on average then, Jimmy?
So we're quite anal about it, to be fair. So set out from the middle of April, the target is to achieve 6 cuts of silage. And we cut every 28 to 32 days and we just get in there. We don't, you know, monitor how much grass is there. It is, you know, I stress, to be fair, if it goes beyond that 32 days and you start seeing a seed head, you've got to get in that field. We've actually cut it in two phases this year. So we've got some ground that's some lighter ground about 10 miles away from where we are. And then the heavier ground where we are, we cut 2 weeks later. So we're just trying to use, you know, manage the ground to make the best possible forage we could. Okay. So we'd be in sort of between the very end of April on the lighter ground and the first week of May on the heavier ground. We made 3.5 months of first cut silage this year. Our target is to, we need basically for the number of cows, 5,000 tons of grass silage and 5,000 ton of maize silage. So therefore, we just get in with the mowers early on. The focus is to make this leafy, high quality grass silage and then try and achieve 58-60% of forage in the diet, which we have, to be fair. You know, we've had sort of maize shortage last year has made us had to feed a lot more grass silage. So we've been up at sort of 9 kilo dry matter grass silage in the ration, which was 5-6 years ago, that was completely unheard of. You know, we were pushing the starch in the diet. We were up at 24-25% starch in the ration. And, you know, we still get the same milk, better milk quality off a higher grass silage ration, which was, I couldn't get my head around for, you know, the first couple of years. Previously, always wanted to get 40 litres a cow. That's been the goal. And it's got to be about milk and milk yield. And, you know, from milking the cow, you stand behind the cow in the parlour and you think, this cow's not hitting her potential. But slowly getting my head around it now that obviously we're selling our milk based on quality. So the goal is now is to keep that forage percentage in the ration at 55-60% all year round, and accept what milk we get. You know, if we're 36-37 litres, well, so be it. But the goal is to get 3.8% fat minimum. And, you know, if we hit some poorer forage, then we just accept it now.
Jimmy, how do you handle with your system getting the dry matter and getting the quality? Because I've got clients who've tried that and they actually then end up making wet stuff and they then complain it slips down the silage pit and it's all a disaster. So how do you avoid all of that?
So to tackle that, we layer our clamps. So we try to, for early cuts and later cuts, the first cut and fifth and sixth, we give a longer wilt period. So we will allow it for an extra day. So potentially up to, you know, between that 36 and 48 hour period. The middle cuts, you know, so we generally, the biggest problem we have with the multi-cut system is their midsummer cuts, so June and July. Despite going in with the mowers at 28 to 32 days, you still have stressed grass. And we made a point to make, we've done a lot of reseeding in the last 5 years to use later heading grasses. But despite that, you still get that midsummer, you know, we go through a drought period and grass stresses. So in terms of tackling that, yeah, layering the clamps, we're actually feeding some third cut at the moment, which we've been on for two and a bit weeks, which was what I was panicking about. We were going to lose milk. That is actually sort of mid-20s dry matter. But because it's in a smaller clamp and we're feeding something like 26.5 kilo, 27 kilo fresh weight of that silage, we're using it that quick that it's not becoming an issue. You know, we're not having heating up issues. That's how we're tackling it.
Jimmy, your fifth cut that you mentioned that's late. I know you have a river at your farm because I saw it when I was at the Welsh Grassland event a few years ago there. You get a bit of flooding like me.
Here goes the Wales chat.
Yeah.
Knew it was coming.
What's it going to be like getting this off? I mean, it's not going to be easy, is it?
No, absolutely. So our fifth cut now is actually 7 weeks this week. Which is stressing me out more than my brother and dad at the moment. So my intention is to, maize crops are looking strong. Potentially, we've grown a lot more maize this year. So we're at 600 acres. We're expecting 8,000 ton or so of maize to come off, whereas our requirement is at 5,000 ton. So finally, after, you know, 10 years of being home, we're in this situation now where we could have some maize carryover, which is just amazing. So the intention is to, with this fifth cut, is to make it for young stock. You know, so be a little bit more relaxed about it. It's going to have to wilt, and we're obviously going to have an extended dry period. But it's just about, and it's through the summer, it's just managing them situations. So we've found some poorer lays. We thought, right, we're not going to cut them lays for the dairy. It's just to be a bit more relaxed, let them come to head. We actually feed poorer quality grass to the young stock and then use more quality concentrates to make their rationer.
Great, Jimmy, that you've adopted that approach. And I guess the bit that some of them might well criticise you on, I know, is that, oh, it's always the cost, isn't it? And, you know, the cost of your system is where I get the biggest flack from clients.
So absolutely. I would say to on this summer's experience, we've saved for 4 months of the year a penny and a half a litre of concentrate cost. And especially with the way the concentrate situation is looking, we normally feed a lot of wheat. Wheat is going to be £45 a tonne more expensive than it was 12 months ago. That has a massive impact on our ration. So if we can get that extra 10% forage in the diet, yeah, there's extra cost from having one or two cuts extra per year. But our goal is making sure that we, you know, and it, this forage, it's not cheap to grow. So you have, you've got to make enough of it. You can grow, you know, you can take an early first cut and feed it for 2 months of the year, and cows can take off and get to 40 litres and everything's hunky-dory. And then suddenly you're in a situation where you haven't got enough of forage. So it's about consistency to just try and generate, obviously a milk price related as well. I think we've got a bit of stability. So our goal is to target milk quality now, which is driving our milk price, make enough of forage and utilize it properly. We've been, you know, through the summer months down at sort of 10 and a half, 11 kilo dry matter of concentrate, whereas in previous years we'd be 13, 14 kilos. The cost impact on the extra couple of cuts of silage, in my mind, sort of pays for itself.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying there, Jimmy, is that in a winter we're facing when there is uncertain milk price, and actually, you know, it's unlikely maybe you will get price increases, then actually this is the way to go to try and make some more money, is to take some of the feed cost out. But you've got to be able to do it right, haven't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, a poor maize crop, if you're 2 or 3 ton down on maize, like so last year, I think our maize has potentially cost us £55-60 a ton, which is, you know, £180, £200 a ton in the dry matter. So are we better off? You know, that's the challenge you get when you don't get your yield right. And again, that's driven by the climate.
Have you had lots of other farmers sort of sit up and take notice and get in touch with you and ask what your secret is?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. So with the Kite Milk Tank Group, I think there's a lot of us that have got on board the last 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
Also, yeah, there's a lot more. So my brother runs the contracting side of it, and we're obviously trying to promote what we're doing, which is brilliant because we're suddenly going to these farms 5-6 times a year. But also that is one negative, that they all want to cut now at the same time as us.
Yeah, I'm sure. Duncan, let's bring you in. What's the feeling been around the country? Is moving the way of multi-cut a sensible way of getting more from your grass?
Yeah, I think pretty much it is. So I think this year we started out pretty negative. Probably the last time we did the forage episode, we're all looking at pretty small first cuts, or had taken the first cut and then there was just a STEMI second cut weighing for us. But I think a lot of that deficit's really been corrected now. And actually, yeah, sentiments are much more positive at the moment. Our first cuts have come in about 11.5 ME, which is bang on target, and 36% dry matter. So I think that's really the strengths of some of this new way of foraging, that we're getting those dry matters up but on really young leafy grasses. And so that's been a really positive step for when we're including them in rations. I think the other thing that's massively helping sentiments is that a lot of the maize around the country is looking absolutely fantastic, and that we should be on for a pretty decent harvest in a couple of weeks, and that should fill some clams. There are definitely pockets which didn't have rain at the right time or really struggled with establishment, so it's not universal. But I think there's enough good maize out there that the industry as a whole and also sort of the market should respond to that.
Duncan, for farmers who aren't multi-cutting, who are going for a more of a traditional approach, what's the season been like?
Yeah, I think they've probably struggled a little bit more, where that later first cut probably did give them a lot more in the clamp, a lot more bulk there, potentially without losing too much quality. But I've got the situation on a few farms where we're now staring at this huge lump of dry, very over mature second cut, and we're going to have to chew through that at some point, and that's going to really hit intakes, really damage milking potential. And so we're sort of faced with the challenge of how are we going to match that sort of into the diets going forward.
Can you make the case for the traditional system for sticking with a three cut system?
I think you can in some situations. So I've got a few autumn block herds where we bring the forage acres into the grazing rotation after first cut. So probably we do want to bulk up that first cut, get a good amount of forage in the clamp before we then graze it for the rest of the season. But outside of that, unless the land is very unsuitable for it, I'm thinking of some of my farms in, you know, on the chalk and stuff like that, where they're going to really dry out over summer. But other than that, I think really everyone's had this advantage of pulling the first cut forward. Now, I do sometimes struggle with having really wet first cuts. So some of these cuts coming in mid-April, when the conditions are still a bit catchy, getting that dry matter up is absolutely crucial, because otherwise you're left with a horrid butyric silage and can run into problems with that. But I think if you can get the good dry matters, then cutting early, exactly as Jimmy says, sort of 30 days is going to really stand you in good stead.
What are going to be the challenges from a feed and forage perspective this winter? There's been a few farms with specific issues of high nitrogen, high ammonia. What might that mean from a milk perspective?
Yeah, I probably don't want to overplay the high nitrate issue. I think it's pretty niche issue. It's very major when it happens, but after a few weeks and a test, then really you can negate that issue. So probably we don't need to overblow that. The challenge we're going to have is that there's still this huge variation in milk price around the country, mm-hmm. and that right now you've got some Arla guys selling, you know, B litres up well over 30p. versus some of the poorer contracts down sort of below 25p. So this differential, along with differences in forage quantities, is really going to make the difference as to how these guys feed for the winter. So, you know, if I've got only reasonable forage quantities and, you know, I've got a lot of potential for those marginal litres, then maybe I'm not looking to accelerate my forage inclusion and I'm maintaining a bit more concentrate feeding, keeping it somewhere at that sort of 50% forage to try and build up forage reserves, because I've got the cash flow where I'm able to do that. If my cash flow is much worse because my B litres aren't there and my milk price feed price ratio is wrong, then I am looking to include a higher rate of forage in those rations. Now is a really crucial time for it, because we're looking at these maize harvests. And if I'm wanting to take that maize up, you know, towards a 55-60% ration, I'm wanting to get it really short. So we're dropping chop lengths maybe down to 12 mil on some of our farms and really completely pulverizing those grains. And that's going to allow me to feed it at those higher rates. If I'm trying to feed a long chopped maize at high rations, I won't get the inclusion in the diet. And also clamp stability. If my clamp isn't stable, there's some secondary fermentation going on, or I'm trying to feed that very early on in the season, it's just not going to do the sort of the high performing TMR herds well. So yeah, you've got to really look at that forage as you're making it and then use that to determine how much you're going to be able to feed going forwards.
John, Duncan began to set the scene there in terms of where we are in the year. Let's put all this in the 2020 context. How important is it going to be to manage your feed costs going into this autumn in the context of what might still happen as COVID moves into the autumn and winter months? Let's put this in a COVID perspective.
Oh, right. Okay. Ooh, I'm going to try and... Well, first of all, I tell you what, when you listen to those two young consultants and farmers in our industry, there's nothing for our industry to fear as they're going forward. Looking forward into the COVID situation through the winter, there is some uncertainty over dairy markets. Chris has been talking about that in recent weeks. Nobody really knows at the end of the day where it's going to be. Duncan's alluded to the fact that there's a big variation in price out there. And I think in terms of driving UK milk flows, then those on better contracts are going to be well placed to actually give some fairly strong milk flows through the winter. whereas others are going to be struggling. I think what Duncan's alluding to there is that if they make the wrong decisions and try and take the milk off forage and it's the wrong forage, then that's going to compromise their milk flows. And that might actually do more damage to their businesses. So we saw that in 2012, especially this late cut stuff that's sitting there now out there in the fields. And I think we've got some real concerns about this material now that we're looking at. That's why we had this podcast, to see if we can get some stable weather and get it off, because, you know, that's a real threat on some of the farms out there.
Well, that's all we have time for today. But a big thank you to our guests today, Jamie Evans, Duncan Williams, John Allen and Chris Walkland.
Yes, thanks also to you for listening. Join us next week for more dairy market news and views. But until then, it's goodbye from Will, me and all of us here. Have a great week and we'll see you next time on the Kite Podcast 2020.